This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
Good evening and welcome to the Paranormal Pulse. I'm Chris Bruno and my co-host is Lance Phillip, and you are listening to the Memorial Day special. And by the way, just so all of you know, yes, I actually have a real voice. I'm not on a telephone this week. We did our research and played with some of our technology and found a way to record this so that we're both, you know, normal people. What's going on, Lance? How are you today?
I'm great. Looking forward to this show. We have a very big guest, and I couldn't be more excited. And that is Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters.
Yeah, it's very exciting. I can't wait to hear all about stuff that you and Grant discussed. One of the things that you guys talked about, and we're going to get right into it here, is cryptids. It's a recap of the cryptids discussion we had last episode. Episode 11, we asked you, the listeners of the Paranormal Pulse podcast, to go on to our Facebook page and weigh in on these, I believe it's six, is it six of them, cryptids, and which one do you think is actually a viable, possible living being? So Lance is going to recap the cryptids, and then we'll discuss some of the results.
Yeah, we actually had a pretty interesting poll. We put it up on our Facebook page, and we got some people who chimed in, and we have a dead tie, sort of.
A dead tie?
Sort of.
Okay.
I have to keep saying that, I know.
Sort of. What did you find out?
Well, nobody believes the Jersey Devil is real, and nobody believes the Thunderbird is real.
Shock.
There is some voting for the Mothman.
Okay.
But not a lot. Next step up is the Yeti.
All right.
There are a few people who believe in the Yeti. But tied at the top are Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster.
Okay.
And they are deadlocked in votes, but we did get to ask Grant Wilson his thought on the subject, and he did chime in, and he will break the ties. So, folks, you're going to have to listen to the end of the show to hear what Grant has to say and find out which cryptid he thinks is real. And again, that will break the tie.
Yes, it will break the tie. I'm looking forward to that. I'm sure our listeners are too. But more so, looking forward to the interview. I want to discuss really quickly also the fact that this is Memorial Day. This is our Memorial Day special. Memorial Day, different than Veterans Day, because Memorial Day represents and honors the fallen soldiers, the people who we lost fighting for our freedoms, and where Veterans Day honors the veterans, the people who've made it through and back home again. We're going to discuss some of the locations that Lance and EKG have investigated, some of the battlegrounds locally and beyond. So Lance, why don't you tell us about some of the battlegrounds that you've investigated and then some of the interesting evidence that you've come to find?
You know, the one good thing about EKG is that we do like to go to a lot of the historic battlefields, not just for the ghost hunting end of it, but because we're big history buffs. You know, myself, Rick, and Virgil, we're all into different aspects of American history. Virgil's very big into the Civil War, as I've grown very attached to it as well. Rick is also into the Civil War. My big love growing up was always the Revolutionary War.
Right.
And the very first investigation we ever did as EKG, and this goes back to 2007, was of Fort William Henry in Lake George, New York. Now, a lot of people know Fort William Henry because it was the fort that was featured in the novel Last of the Mohicans. It wasn't an American fort, so to speak. It was used mainly during the French and Indian War, but that war was fought between the French and the English. But the American colonists also fought on the side of Great Britain. And that was to defend the colonies because they didn't want the French coming down. And a multitude of other reasons as well. But the American colonists, who would later become the militia and then become the Continental Army, fought. And that was really what you could really call, in my opinion, the first assemblings of the American military. Mm-hmm. We went there. And again, we were novices. We didn't really know much. It was a ghost tour of the of the fort. It wasn't really an investigation, so to speak, but it was the first foray that we had into ghost hunting. Again, at the time, it was new to us. We just had cameras, and we kind of went there, and were led around by a guide who had a K2 meter and was taking EMF readings around, was telling
cool.
us some of the best ghost stories about the place, where to look. And as the tour guide was telling us about, you know, different places, and a lot of people were afraid, I ventured off and went by myself into a lot of the places, as I have a tendency to do on these type of things.
Of course you did.
Yeah, well, but we took a lot of photographs. We did have some personal experiences. Jen had her hair pulled. Mm-hmm. I had a camera bag on my shoulder, and I was positioned in a corner. So there was nobody in front of me or to my right. There were people behind me, but at least a good 5 feet away.
Right.
And there were people to my left, at least a good couple of feet away. My camera bag actually lifted up and dropped down.
Oh, wow.
I didn't touch it. It freaked me out at the time. I mean, because I was like, did that just happen? And it did. It happened. Jen had her hair pulled. At the same time she had her hair pulled, another woman snapped a picture, and right behind Jen's head was a big streak of light, which
was
really kind of cool. So we had some photographic anomalies there. We had some personal experiences. But again, we were novices. We didn't have EMF detectors other than what the group leader had. We didn't have voice recorders. We weren't doing EVPs at the time. But that really got us excited and really propelled us to move forward in our paranormal investigating and become more serious about it. So,
sure. You know, those personal experiences always kind of jettison you into that where you want more. You need to do more. You need to see and experience more. So, and we're grateful for that because here we both are.
Right, absolutely. From there, we went to another, not on the same trip, but the next time we went to Fort Ticonderoga, which is on Lake Champlain in upstate New York. And,
like the pencils.
yeah, exactly. That's the area they're from. But yep. There's two things around that area. You have Lake Champlain, which there is the Lake Champlain monster known as Champ, which is similar to the Loch Ness monster, bringing it back to our cryptid conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to hear about the local legend there. But getting back to what really counts here is the American fort. Fort Ticonderoga, during the American Revolution, was a fort that was kind of falling apart. And what happened was the fort at Crown Point, which is just a few miles away, fell. And then the English had to fall back into Fort Ticonderoga and start using it again. Well, that actually became the first victory of the American Revolution for the American troops when they took the fort. The Green Mountain Boys went in and captured the fort. And that is the first win for the American Army in the Revolution. Again, there, when we were there, we were there more for the history, but we did some, you know, as always, some paranormal investigating through there, taking photographs. And that was another place where we had personal experiences and we have some good photographic evidence. And again, that was really at our beginning of doing this, so we didn't have a lot of sophisticated equipment. We didn't have EMF meters. We weren't even using digital recorders again. Again, it was mostly for personal experiences and for, you know, photographic evidence.
Well, sure, because all the equipment is really just to collect evidence to prove to other people.
Right, and we just weren't that sophisticated back then. You know, we were just starting, you know, we were just starting out. The next place that we went to, which by this point, this was only a couple of years ago, we have long been doing this, and now we're really sophisticated, and we go to historic Newbridge Landing in Bergen County,
nice.
New Jersey. The thing about historic Newbridge Landing is that's where General George Washington retreated from the British forces, and he crossed the Hackensack River there at its narrowest point and then settled in behind the river. What's great about that place, historic Newbridge Landing, is it's a museum at this point with the Steuben House, and you can go there and you can actually see a lot of the history. And they periodically do reenactments there. But they actually do have chairs that Washington had used along with Lafayette, who had met there with Washington. There's also a bed there that, unlike a lot of places in America that claim Washington slept here, well, Washington did sleep there.
Plus, those beds are like itty bitty.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing how small
people
things are.
People were short back then.
Yeah,
we
absolutely.
Grow them big now.
Now, the thing about what's great about that is we had a lot of video evidence from that investigation. And that is on our YouTube channel, which is Ghost Hunters 617 on YouTube. And you can look for the historic Newbridge Landing video. We go through it. There's a lot of the photographic evidence we captured. But what's great is we had some interactive evidence with the EMF meter, and that's on there where we're answering, asking very specific questions, getting very specific answers to our questions. So it's a really cool one. So again, you can go there, and that's the YouTube channel, and that's Ghost Hunter 617. It's the historic Newbridge Landing video.
That's a good place to see other videos as well. If you wanted to check out EKG's videos, there's some instructional videos there on some of the equipment, some reviews, is that correct? And of course, some investigations just like that one we're just discussing.
Absolutely. One of the other places we went to, again, is in New Jersey, down in a little bit south of there, in Princeton, New Jersey, and that is the Battle of Princeton. Battle of Princeton was a big victory for the Continental Army over the British. And that's an interesting place because it's a little bit smaller than I had anticipated when we first read about it and said, okay, we have to go down there. There's a historic building, and then there's some informational displays around the battlefield, but there's not a lot to see there. And then there's a monument, but it's a place that has a lot of activity. When we went, we got a bunch of good EVPs there. We didn't get anything photographic. Now, I have seen other teams that have been there and have gotten some really great apparition photos. Now, we didn't get those, but again, we did get some good EVPs. So it was definitely worth being there. It's also just a nice place to visit. Very peaceful.
Okay.
But, yeah, and you know, just reading the stories about the soldiers there and the heroics that went on, again, with our servicemen there. Just something to remember on this Memorial Day.
It's just amazing how many fallen soldiers. We always think about modern day and respect and appreciate everything that our modern day soldiers do. But this goes back to the Civil War, to the Revolutionary War, to all of those soldiers who have fallen to protect what we appreciate now. Now, I'm not going to stay on my soapbox and lecture about Memorial Day. We all know about it. We had a great 3-day or 4-day weekend out of it, but really try to remember those soldiers that have fallen for us.
Hey, this is Grant Wilson of Ghost Hunters, and you're listening to the Paranormal Pulse.
So we were talking about before how we have our EKG team member Virgil, who is extremely excited about Civil War stuff. And isn't he like related or a descendant of or something? We're going to have to pick his brain. But you had a couple of sites that you went to as well that we can talk about this Memorial Day, Civil War sites, battlefields. So tell us a little bit more about that, Lance.
Well, what intrigued me was, Virgil being on our team, being a very big into the Civil War, he had told me a lot about his visits to when he went to Antietam and Gettysburg. So we went to Antietam, and just to start off, when you go to visit Antietam, it's much different than when you visit Gettysburg. Gettysburg is very commercialized. It's very paranormal driven. There's paranormal stuff all throughout the town, different ghost tours and whatnot. Antietam's much different. Antietam's not built up like Gettysburg. The visitor center is old-fashioned, not big and modern like Gettysburg. So it's a little bit different of an experience. But the battlefield, for people who don't know, Antietam is considered the single bloodiest single-day battle in American history. There were 22,000 dead in one day.
Wow.
Combined both sides. Now, the Battle of Antietam, which is also known as the Battle of Sharpsburg for the people down south. In the north, we call it Antietam. They call it Sharpsburg. Again, it was the single bloodiest battle in American history.
Wow.
Just to give you an idea, there were 22,000 dead on that one day. In the American Revolution, there were only 6,000 dead the entire war. So you could just see the brutality. When you look at the photos that were taken after the old-time photos, and you see just the multitudes of dead lying in the fields, it's just the carnage, and it's just horrible to look at. It's horrific, you know. And those are the people that we're honoring on Memorial Day, you know, the people who died there, and you know, and of course in all the other battles that America has fought. But you know, it's just amazing to see when you're there, like when you're in Burnside's Bridge and you know, and it's so peaceful. It's so beautiful looking now, and you just can't imagine the destruction that was going on then in comparison. You know, you're there now. It's this beautiful place, and it's very peaceful. And conversely, at the time, it was just brutal. So, you know, it's just hard to imagine that. And the thing about it was tactically an inconclusive battle, but
nobody won.
It had enough significance to be a victory for the North. And that gave way for Abraham Lincoln to go ahead with confidence to announce the Emancipation Proclamation. It was a big turning point in the war. And it's
amazing. In those battles, all those people who fought for us, even back then, their deaths didn't go without a purpose, you know.
Just relax. We are now checking your paranormal pulse.
You're listening to the Paranormal Pulse podcast. I'm Chris Bruno, co-host Lance Phillip is with me. And if you have any questions, we don't have listener questions this week because we have a very special interview coming up soon. But if you have any questions for the next episode, we're going to have an interesting little schedule going on. We'll tell you more about that right now. If you have questions, listener questions, submit them now. You can submit them on our Paranormal Podcast Facebook page. You can submit them at EKG for our East Coast Ghost. That's our paranormal investigative team. It's East Coast with a K Ghost on Facebook as well. And lastly, we have a phone number you can call. If you want to call the number, you can leave a message, ask a question, leave a comment, whatever you want. What's that number, Lance?
It's 805-633-09. And again, it's 805-633-09. When you call up, just tell us your name, where you're from, and then ask your question. And we'll bring it up on listener questions.
You all want to listen to Grant, so do we. And we have a special treat from Grant towards the end of the show. Make sure you stick around for that interview. It's coming up next on the Paranormal Pulse.
Take a deep breath and relax as we check your Paranormal Pulse.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a very special guest. It is my pleasure and privilege to have Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters and Taps on the show tonight. How you doing, Grant?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Excellent, excellent.
Good.
You know, we know you've left the show and you've moved on from there. And there were all kinds of rumors out there, rumors that you were divorcing your wife, rumors that you had a terminal illness, rumors that you had a falling out with Jay. Can you just quickly dispel those rumors and let people know really quick why you left the show?
No, they're all true. I have cancer and that's why I'm getting divorced. And I'm just kidding. I'm fine. No. For me, I thought it was interesting how how many people really, it was clear to me how many people really, really were wishing they could be in my shoes, because when I left, so many people thought that something cataclysmic had to be happening for me to give up that position on the show. And I understand that, but the grass is always greener a little bit. And while doing the show was a blast and a dream come true, after 8 years of doing it, it was starting to affect my health. Your sleep schedule is terrible. You're never going to bed at the same time, and you could go to bed at 5 a.m. one day, and then you have to go to bed at 8 p.m. the next to try to catch a flight, and you're moving through time zones. And what people don't realize is that we were filming, every week of the year, just about. We'd have to crush and crunch real hard in order to get enough time off for Thanksgiving and Christmas, because they want 26 episodes. It takes about 2 weeks to film an episode. Do the math. That's 52 weeks. That's a whole year. And it was just...
I was going to say, it's really funny because we've investigated my group a couple of places where you folks have, and they explained to us, and I would ask, I was like, well, so what was it like when Ghost Hunters were here? And they would say, well, they were basically here for 2 weeks shooting, whether you guys were shooting B-roll or anything else. So it really amazed me at the process when people explained it to me.
Yeah, and everyone thinks that you film, you look at the show and it looks like you're investigating for one night, but you're actually there for three or four sometimes. We did the Stanley Hotel. We were there for 9 nights.
Wow.
And they just compress it into one night because it's just, otherwise you eat up too much TV time explaining that you're leaving and going and leaving and going. But after 8 years of that, watching my 1 year, I started the show, my youngest was 1 year old, and then he was 9. I'm looking at him and I go, I gotta stop. I gotta do it for my heart, my health, and for my family. I just gotta stop. As much as I enjoy it, I gotta stop. And my biggest fear was that I was gonna let all the fans down and all the people who are out there working hard investigating the paranormal. I felt like I was gonna let them down. But then I stopped and I thought about what my goals were going into the show: to raise awareness, to help people think differently about the paranormal, and to get, to just kind of let people who have the paranormal bothering them in their home know that there are people out there who can actually help. And I feel like I had met and exceeded that goal times 10. And so I felt like, you know, if I stop and go back and take care of my sweet poor family that has endured me being gone so much, that I wasn't really going to let anybody down. And it's been great.
Yeah.
Kind of the best of both worlds. You know, I was able to live that dream, and now I'm home with my family and working on some of my other talents and loves.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I've heard Dustin basically talk about the same thing, why he had left GHI, and it was basically a separation from his family. It got to be too much from what he was explaining. So, you know, I could see, especially with that filming schedule, how it could really be rough. Plus, you guys were doing the Halloween specials, and, you know, and I think, like you said, your son there, you had to miss a lot of those Halloweens. That had to be tough.
Yeah. Well, I have three sons, and so it's tough. It's just terribly imbalanced. You're
right.
You know, even if you're working a job 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, you come home, you have dinner, you know, you're with your family, you sleep in your own bed, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
This is not that way. You would leave Monday and come home Saturday, you know, and you have to be super dad on the weekend. And it was tough, and it was worth it. But after a while, it was just so terribly imbalanced that you know, I had to swallow that pill and be a man and be there for my family, and it's been great. Now, everyone thinks I stopped investigating the paranormal.
Well, I was going to say, you noticed that on Twitter. I saw your tweet today on that you had said the biggest misconception was that you stopped investigating and that you have these millions of dollars. So,
yeah
I saw that. I was laughing when I saw that. Because that actually stems to a question that my wife has been bugging me to ask you, because she said she knows you're still investigating, and she wanted me to ask you, do you ever still investigate with Jason at all, you know, not for the show?
With Jason, no, because the last thing he wants to do when he's home is get out and go investigate again. I mean, he's doing it
right
full time, and, you know, and when he's home, the last thing I'm going to do to him and his poor family is take more time away from them, so... When we were filming the show, we ourselves would not investigate off the show, only rarely, because your time at home is too precious. But I'm still with Taps. You know, they're kind of being easy on me and letting me take some time off. But I'm still with them.
Because, that's great.
You know, I gotta get back to my family. But I have been investigating some cases that are close to me and my friends, and the pretty serious cases. So I do that kind of stuff quietly with a few close people and get to the bottom of it. Yeah.
And
so,
the thing,
still
you
doing
know,
it.
And you know, on your website, GrantWilson.com, you still have articles relating to the paranormal, and you're still contributing to Taps Paramag. So, I mean, you're still involved, and that's what people should realize, that you haven't abandoned everything.
Right. And a lot of people reacted like I was dying.
Right.
I'm still here. I'm just not on TV. Like, I'm still doing my stuff. So,
that's
yeah, GrantWilson.com is where people can go and see everything about me. Especially, you know, and what I want people to know is that I'm out there. I'm still doing conventions. I'm doing events, a lot fewer than I was before. But I'm out there. You can come up and say hi. And I'm a lot easier to talk to because my time isn't so stretched.
Right.
So come say hi, and I'm happy to hang out and see everybody and talk and whatever. It's all good.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to be at one of the events you're going to be at later in the year, which is the Paracon in Bethlehem, PA at the Sands. So that's going to be a fun one. There's a lot of people on that one.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so we'll be there, and that's local for us, so it's only about an hour away. We wind
nice.
Up going there to gamble a lot anyway, so it'll be a fun trip. I was almost
Well, awesome, man.
Yeah, well, I was almost thinking we should get a Texas Hold'em paranormal base. There's a lot of paranormal, you know, people playing Texas Hold'em, get a little tournament going, but I don't know if that would fly.
Oh, I would fail. I have no poker face. None whatsoever.
There you go. So let's talk about some of the things you're doing now. Rather Dashing Games. Tell people about it.
Yeah, well, I have one of my best friends I've known since I was 5, Mike Ritchie, has been designing board games for quite a while. He's very successful at it. But he wanted to branch out on his own. He wanted to have his own company. And now he and I are geeks. You know, I love everything from Lord of the Rings, D&D, all this stuff. I love board gaming. I've been making a board game since I was a kid. And he told me that that one of the most expensive and difficult parts of making a board game is the art. I've been drawing ever since I could hold a pencil. And so I said, well, I can do that. And we got together and started rather dashing games, and we called it that because that's kind of the feel we wanted to have. We don't want to be, we want it to feel like our games are more than just roll the dice or pick up cards, that there's more to it. So we did it. We started with two games. We made another third game, Four Taverns, which has gone really well. Everybody who plays it loves it. And we're right now in the process of trying to get our next game, Dwarven Miner, funded. And poor people on Twitter and Facebook, I'm beating them over the head with it, trying to support the business and my partner, and trying to make sure that we can make this happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for people who don't know, there's a Kickstarter campaign out there. I pledged on it. It's a very good thing. Can you give them the where they can find it?
Well, the easiest way is to just go to Kickstarter.com and type in Dwarven Miner, because the URL they give you is really, really long. But
right.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, I know I had a hand in making the game, but it's quite literally one of the best games I've played in a long time. And it's awesome. Anybody can learn it. It doesn't take long to learn, but the strategies come in subtly, and it becomes just a lot of fun. We've had it extensively test played. People love it. And for me, it's a dream come true, because I pour all my heart and soul into the artwork of the game. I did all the art, and that's a dream of mine, is to make a living off of my artwork. And we really feel that this game, Dwarven Miner, is going to push this company over the edge and allow that to happen for not only myself and my family, but my business partner, his family, and you know, and just bring a whole lot of cool games into the world.
Now, I will say, I've seen a lot of the artwork, and I went online and watched the gameplay video that you have. And for people who are gamers, I'm a gamer myself, and I notice a lot of paranormal investigators are gamers and musicians and artists.
Yeah.
I noticed this is a common trend, because I went to school. I graduated with a degree in art. I played Dungeons & Dragons games like that growing up, and I'm a musician. I wound up actually leaving the art field to go into music when I was younger. So it's a very strange thing. I noticed there are a lot of people with that common trend out there. I'm wondering if there is some type of connectivity between all the different things.
No, I believe that there is a connection. I've had this conversation with people before. I think, you know, if you're artistically or you're creatively driven, you have that kind of open mindset to the point where you are curious. You hunger for something that isn't discovered yet. You want to know the unknown. You want to explore regions unknown. And I think that they go hand in hand. I've noticed the same thing as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And, you know, getting back to the artwork, I will say, being an old school gamer, I'm 43, and actually my dad had like one of the earliest versions of Dungeons and Dragons. So
nice.
Yeah, I actually still have it to this day. It's actually the first edition. It's a very thin paper book, but if your artwork harkens back to a lot of that old Dungeons and Dragons, old Dungeon Master's Guidebook, old Player's Handbook type of artwork, and it's fantastic. It's a really nice package. You know, I recommend, again, go to that Kickstarter and pledge, and I think it'll definitely be worth it.
Well, thank you.
I was going to say, they're definitely, and, you know, Grant's got some different tiers on there with, you get some different things listed in the credits. It was an 8x10 printer autographed for a $20 pledge and whatnot. So there are some rewards out there, too, that make it more than worth it. So, plus getting the game out there.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand Kickstarter. It's not a telethon or anything like that. It's basically seeing if the product will survive on its own. So if you like it, you give your money, and we give you all sorts of cool things because you gave money. Like, if you play, the game is going to retail for $50. If you give us $50, we'll give you the game and pay for shipping, and no, there's no tax. So that's the cheapest way you're ever going to be able to get the game. And, you know, we worked with Reaper Minis. Anyone who's in the geek world will know who they are.
Absolutely.
Good friends of ours. And they offered up a package of four dwarves to include in the game to replace the pawns. And there are chainmail dice bags and prints of my artwork, limited edition signed, all this stuff. You know, just to say thanks or give you incentives to help out a little bit more.
And that's something about the game, too. It does lend itself to miniatures for those who do game with miniatures. So I like the idea. Like I said, I pledge, and hopefully you can get some other people out there who I'll bug to pledge, and we'll go from there.
Well, awesome. I really appreciate that. And when we're at Parafest, we'll have to get together and give it a shot.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love that. Now let's talk about the other big project you have, which is your band Carpet Shark.
Yeah. I've always been, I've always loved creating music ever since I taught myself to play piano and guitar when I was 14. And what's interesting is that I got together with a couple of my friends back when I was 14, 15, and we had a band, and we played some things and did talent shows and stuff. And then we all separated, went to college and got married and did our things. And then we came back together, and the amount of talent we had was that everyone had now was incredible. And we wrote, you know, five songs in 3 hours and didn't even barely say anything to each other. We just had that kind of chemistry. So it's an alternative rock band, and we're not taking it too seriously, but we're having a good time and having a lot of fun, and we're in the process of trying to record some stuff and see if we can get it out there.
And it's a blast.
I love doing that.
Yeah, and you know, again, you can go to Grant's website, and there's a link on there for Carpet Shark, and you can go to their SoundCloud page, and there's a lot of good music on there. Definitely check out Full of Sound and My Distraction. But also one that I really like, too, is Landmine on there. Kind of a little bit heavier than some of the other songs on there. And for people, you know, people who haven't listened to Grant's music, it's alternative, but it's got a very good groove to it. A lot of big bass hooks. And what you'll find fascinating, if you go to Grant's YouTube page, you can see them playing. What I found fascinating is that the fact that you guys switch off instruments. You and Chris wind up swapping bass and guitar back and forth, which I thought was really interesting. And your wife plays bass on there as well. So that's a very
unique, that's a
very unique thing. You know, me having been in the music business and worked with a lot of different bands, it's something you don't see a lot of where people switch instruments like that and do it well.
Wow, thanks.
Yeah, it's not something I've seen a lot of. Obviously, I've seen people swap vocals back and forth, you know, but not switch instruments. So it's an interesting dynamic you have. So
yeah, everyone in the band is very, very talented. So it works out nice, and you'll notice. What stinks is that we, on the Carpet Shark SoundCloud page, we only have a few tracks. We have about 50 songs, 50-plus songs.
Right.
That go all different ranges. We have some that are a lot heavier, some that are a lot lighter, some that are more trancey and crazy. We're all over the map, and we're just having fun.
The Paranormal Pulse podcast welcomes Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters and his band, Carpet Shark. Here's Full of Sound on the Paranormal Pulse podcast.
Listen and see.
So what would you say your main musical influences were growing up?
Growing up, I liked a lot of the classics, like Led Zeppelin. As I got older, I got into, obviously, Pearl Jam and Smashing Pumpkins, Foo Fighters, Nirvana, that type of stuff. And then I started going into things like Massive Attack or, let's see, what was the other band? You put me on the spot. Let's see.
I did.
That's always a tough one. But, Silver Sun Pickups, things like that. So,
okay.
We're kind of all over the place. Definitely alternative sound, but not so alternative that it's uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. It's not to the point where it's so far out there that it's not enjoyable. There are some great hooks, and, you know, it's really enjoyable. I mean, it's not overly heavy. It's not overly light. It's good. You have a good mixture.
Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, full of sound. I mean, that starts out very melodic and then really builds up to a heavier part towards the middle. Your wife, Rihanna, her vocals are really enchanting in that song, you know. And I noticed that, too, on My Distraction. She has kind of an ethereal sound to her voice, you know. So it's it's a great setup, you know. I enjoyed it listening to it the last couple of days, and knowing that you were going to come on, I really started listening to it much more carefully. And I tell you, it's good. I mean, can't wait to hear that stuff in the studio, you know.
So yeah, it grows on you. And that song, My Distraction, is actually about a ghost who's in love with someone who's still alive, and the ghost is singing the song, and that's why she's kind of got that ethereal.
Right.
Quality.
Right.
You're listening to the Paranormal Pulse podcast and Grant Wilson's band, Carpet Shark. It's My Distraction.
Thank you.
obviously, you've been on TV, and now you have the music going. And it's funny because, you know, the guys from Ghost Adventures, they both have, Zach and Nick, they have both put out albums. So it's something I'm noticing. You know, it's right through. So it's really interesting. And Steve, he from Ghost Hunters, he plays drums, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Not with you guys.
He's a very talented drummer.
He plays a lot of jazz, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's a very good jazz drummer, yeah.
That's great.
He's just a good drummer in general, but he loves playing jazz.
Very cool. Now, how often do you guys play out?
Well, we were playing out somewhat regularly, and then we kind of took some time off to try and record and stuff. We haven't played out in a while. We're trying to get back to it, but everyone's kind of going through a busy phase. So whenever we can get together, we jam and work on stuff, but playing out. Not happening right now, but hopefully in the future.
Good. You know, we'll switch it back to the paranormal a little bit.
Now, sure.
What would you say the thing you miss most about being on the show is?
The thing I miss most about being on the show is, hanging out with the crew, the cameraman, the soundman, you know, all the folks in Taps, of course. I mean, I still talk to them all the time, but I don't see them as much. And, that's why I'm excited to do some of these events. I get to hang out with Steve and Dave again.
And
Bruce Tango. But it was really nice where, you were just always getting shipped around to these places that had such high potential for activity. But what I missed while I was on the show was the fact that I, like, following a case through to the end, like, I'm able to do that again, and that's huge. That was always what helped me the most, is that knowing I took these people from completely confused and lost and scared all the way through to confident, solved the problem, understood what the entity needed, if it needed it, and everything is good. Where on the show, you're basically watching a preliminary investigation where we go in, we determine what is exactly going on, try to sort fact from fiction, and then we would continue to pursue until we got answers or until the family was completely comforted and everything was okay. But on the show, we would hand that information off to a local team and let them take care of it if it needed that.
Excellent. We've been asking people on our website and actually on the show, we've been asking about cryptids, other parts of paranormal. Which you think would be the most likely? Do you think Bigfoot would be most likely? The Loch Ness Monster? The Mothman? The Jersey Devil? If you had to pick one, what would you think would be the most most likely to turn out real? And which do you think just have no shot?
Yeah, well, I think the Jersey Devil is not legit. Like, I don't think that there's actually what people think is out there. I think it might be I think it's a combination of maybe some paranormal activity plus some sightings that aren't quite right. But I think the one that really is possible to me is the Bigfoot / Yeti. It's not that hard for me to accept the fact that there might be some large primate walking around the Pacific Northwest or, you know, in the mountains of Nepal or whatever. That's not too hard for me. It doesn't seem like that's a big stretch. And, of course, if it's intelligent enough, it can avoid being detected most of the time. That, to me, that sounds more believable than ghosts, quite honestly.
Okay.
to the average person, the person who's just, if you introduce them all for the first time, Bigfoot seems like the most possible. Loch Ness Monster, maybe. I mean, they've really put a lot of effort into that one, trying to find it, and they haven't found much. But when you start getting really crazy out there, like Mothman, the problem with Mothman is it kind of fits all categories and none at the same time.
Right.
You know, it seems to have aspects of UFO, of cryptozoology, of paranormal, interdimensional, all this stuff all wrapped in one. And that one's just, I don't think we'll ever figure out what that is.
And speaking of UFOs, where do you kind of stand on them?
UFOs, I'm a big believer. I think that is another thing that is completely logical. I mean, on the surface, people get way too deep into it. But I think, you know, the other life out there, of course. I think it would be completely arrogant to think that there is another life out there, that this is all for us. But I've seen lots of weird stuff as far as UFOs go, and there are a lot of odd things going on with the government and things like that.
Right.
But, that's not beyond the realm of comprehension to me, people from other planets coming and visiting, and, you know, for nefarious reasons or for good reasons, that doesn't seem too out of control.
Now, we play a little game on our show called Paranormal Lifeboat. Now, it's not a literal lifeboat. It's just a theoretical lifeboat. And we're going to put you in this scenario. Okay. I'm going to put you right on the spot on this one. I'm sorry. I have to do it. I've done it to every guest. So you're the captain of the lifeboat. You're the captain of the lifeboat. There's only two other seats on the lifeboat. So you can only save two people, theoretically. And one person's going to get left behind. So the question I asked, and I asked this to one of the last shows to Brian Kano from Haunted Collector, and I got his answer, and we've kicked it around. If you had to pick a paranormal TV show team leader to be on your lifeboat, okay, out of the three, now this is kind of a loaded question because you've already worked with one of them. Who would you want on the boat with you? Jason, obviously from your old show, Josh Gates from Destination Truth, or Zach Baggins from Ghost Adventures.
So I have to pick one, right?
No, you can pick, two of them are coming with you. One guy's getting left behind.
This is a loaded question. well, I'll tell you what. I would definitely take Jason, of course. He's he'll stick by your side no matter what. And although Josh Gates, I love him, he talks a lot, I'd have him too, because those are two guys that I could trust with my life. And I don't know Zach very much. I don't know him that well. I haven't had the opportunity to get to know him that well. So, of course, I'm going to pick the two guys that are my buddies.
There you go. And Josh, I got to meet Josh and spend some time with him at the Phenomenology Convention. He was fantastic. I also have a little Bruce Tango story for you. We wound up staying at the same hotel that he was. He was staying away from the main hotel where everybody else was. I go to breakfast, and I see him sitting there, and I'm like, I'm looking at my face, hey, it's Bruce Tango. I didn't want to bother him. I didn't want to be that guy to walk up to him while he's eating breakfast. So I saw him later on at the show, and I said, hey, I saw you at breakfast, and I didn't want to bother you. And we would talk back and forth. He goes, why not? I say, because I'm not going to be that guy who walks up and just bothers you while you're eating. He goes, hey, I'm just Bruce Tango. He goes, you just come by and sit next to me and talk. He goes, that's fine. He is such a nice guy, I got to tell you.
He is legit. He is genuine, and that guy, I tell you, if you ever want to sit down and talk to somebody, he's the guy to talk to. He's got stories, and he's just so nice and so legitimately nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, he really cares about everybody. What a great guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was spending his time with the fans there. I got to tell you, that's one thing I'm very impressed with, is how much time when you go to these conventions that the para celebrities, they spend so much time with the people, and they're intermingling. It's not like they're on any type of pedestal, and it's just like you're talking to your best friend there. And I'm really impressed with that. And I tell you, that's something that I think the community should be really proud of.
Yeah, it's great. And every time we would go and do conventions and events and stuff like that, and we'd have somebody new, whether new in Taps or someone who hasn't done one before from another show, we always say, hey, look, remember, these people took all the time and energy and money to come here, make it worth their while. All these people have either a question or a problem that they need answered. They're just not necessarily going to come right out with it. So you got to talk to these people and make sure that you get those things out of them so that it's, because they came for that reason, to get those questions or problems answered. And you got to kind of pull it out of them. And that's great. We watch people just blossom, and we love it. We love it. They always put me behind a table when I'm signing and stuff, and I hate that. I like to get out from behind the table and talk to everybody and just have a good time.
Now, over the years, I'm sure you've seen these conventions get bigger and bigger, too. I mean, as more people have gotten into the field and the exposure has gotten out there, mainly due to shows like yours and some of the others and the word spread, these things have had to have gotten a lot bigger. What have you really seen in that sort of, that direction?
Oh, definitely. I remember when Jay and I would do conventions or lectures before the show, and you're lucky if you get 30 people there. And, then as the show went on and as other shows started, you could see that together all the shows were really helping people to open their eyes to this and not be ashamed of it. And then you get 100 people, then 500 and thousands And it's always, Jay and I would talk about it all the time, overwhelming to watch the field that you grew up in that was kind of shunned and you didn't really talk about to become cool. And everybody wanted to know about it. And you're talking to people who are FBI agents or people who are nuclear physicists, and they're interested in it and interested in helping. And it would always blow our minds to watch it being accepted. It's just, that was one of our goals, and I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, what I've noticed just from my standpoint, a lot of people who have found out that I'm a paranormal investigator, they approach you very slowly and very quietly. They pull you to the side. But once you get them talking, all of a sudden it's like they open up. And I do notice, like, one of the trucks we have has our logos on it and whatnot. And we'll go places and people will be like, is that your truck? Are you guys the investigators? And all of a sudden, they just really want to tell you about all their experiences and whatnot. And it's actually led to some great cases, and you know, over time. I'm sure you've had that on a much bigger scale than we have.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's got a story, or you know somebody who had an experience, you know, and it's great. It's awesome.
Do you have anything you want to plug before we go?
Maybe just some of the dates where people can see me and come say hi.
Okay.
All right, so let's see. If you're a gamer, you can see me June 12th at Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio. You can also see me at Fandom Fest at the Kentucky International Convention Center, July 26th. Gen Con Indy, another game convention, August 15th in Indiana. And then, obviously, if you're into the paranormal, I'm going to be at Parafest, September 6th, and the Stanley Hotel next April. And all this is up on grantswilson.com. And people can track what I'm doing there. And, you know, I just like to meet everybody, so come say hi.
Excellent. I thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
No problem. Yeah, anytime.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I'll see you at Parafest, yeah?
Absolutely.
Find the Paranormal Pulse podcast on Facebook under Paranormal Pulse Podcast. It's that simple.